Blog Talk Radio.
For radio as godless as our Constitution, tune in to Free Thought Radio.
It's our coronaversary, 1 year of remote radio.
After a lot of news, we'll talk with the neuroscientist and freethinker, Jeff Hawkins, about his groundbreaking new book,
1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence.
This is the news in brief from the United Nations. The UN Rights Office, OHCHR, and the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, on Thursday called on Myanmar's neighbors to offer shelter to all those fleeing violence and persecution amid ongoing strife linked to the 1st of February coup. The appeal comes as the Myanmar crisis enters its third month, with additional concerns raised about renewed fighting between state armed forces and ethnic armed groups in border areas, which have driven people to flee. According to the UN Rights Office, OHCHR, at least 510 peaceful protesters have been killed by the security forces, and more than 2,600 are in detention, including many held incommunicado or forcibly disappeared. Night raids, mass arrests, and killings have become daily occurrences throughout the country, the OHCHR Southeast Asia Regional Office said in a news release. 10 days after armed groups carried out a deadly attack on 3 villages near the western Niger town of Tilia, UN humanitarians have repeated their call for greater protection of civilians and all those displaced by violence in the Sahel. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, reported on Thursday that 6 refugees from nearby Mali were among the 137 people who were killed on the 21st of March by assailants on motorbikes. Most of the victims had already fled violence in 2020, UNHCR said, adding that 1,400 survivors from the targeted villages are now on the move and many are in shock and mourning. Highlighting the vulnerability of civilians in the region and the urgency of their situation, Gillian Triggs, UNHCR's Assistant High Commissioner for Protection, encouraged efforts to address the growing insecurity, noting that it was clear that the attacks on displaced people and communities hosting them were targeted and deliberate. In addition to the unjustifiable violence meted out against civilians, shelters and granaries were also burned to the ground. Cattle were stolen or killed. Survivors have nothing left, Ms. Triggs said. Niger, Burkina Faso, and Mali in the Sahel are at the center of one of the world's fastest growing displacement and protection crises. The region now hosts nearly 3 million refugees and people displaced inside their own country. Finally, to Rwanda, where it's been 27 years since more than 1 million people were systematically murdered in less than 3 months there. In comments marking the International Day of Reflection on the 1994 genocide, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres urged all people to join in solidarity with the African nation and to take a hard look at today's world to ensure that the events of 1994 are not forgotten. All around the world, people now face pressure and manipulation from extremists to join their ranks, Mr. Guterres said, describing the hardline groups as the principal security threat in many countries. The UN chief condemned their vile messages that are now transmitted on social media platforms, as well as the misinformation and hate speech that are used to stoke violence. Despite their divisive threat, there is hope, the Secretary-General insisted, describing Rwanda's progress since overwhelmingly Tutsi victims were murdered, along with many Hutus and others who opposed the genocide.
Rwanda experienced one of the most painful chapters in modern human history, but its people have rebuilt from the ashes. After suffering unspeakable gender-based violence and discrimination, Rwanda's women now hold more than 60% of parliamentary seats, making Rwanda a world leader. The people of Rwanda have shown us the power of justice and reconciliation and the possibility of progress. On this solemn day, let us all commit to building a world guided by human rights and dignity for all.
To prevent history from repeating itself, the UN chief called on people to resist these hate-driven movements and to redouble their efforts to defend the rights of all members of society. Daniel Johnson, UN News.
This is Free Thought Radio with co-hosts Dan Barker and Annie Laurie Gaylor. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews.
Imagine there's no heaven.
Imagine.
Welcome to Free Thought Radio. I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor, and happy April Fools. You probably know what Psalm 14 says, "The fool says in his heart, there is no God," but the wise person says it out loud.
And I'm Dan Barker, co-host with Annie Laurie Gaylor of this show. This is Free Thought Radio for April 1st, April Fool's Day 2021. It was 1 year ago, on April 2nd, 2020, when the pandemic forced Annie Laurie and me to move the recording of the show from the Freedom from Religion Foundation Stephen Yule Friendly Atheist Studio in our national office in downtown Madison, Wisconsin, to this makeshift studio at our home a couple miles away. Our engineer, Buzz Kemper, has been producing the show since that time from Audio for the Arts, which is his recording studio near the Wisconsin State Capitol. So today is Free Thought Radio's first Coronaversary.
And let's hope, but not pray, that this is our only Coronaversary. And we should also mention, I don't believe that we have mentioned, that Stephen Yule, for whom the studio is named, died in February. We got rather belated news that he died in Arizona at 90 and was a great benefactor, a great promoter and booster of free thought on so many levels. And we will very much miss him and send our condolences to his widow, Diane. In a few weeks, we're going to be celebrating Free Thought Radio's 15th anniversary. We started broadcasting in April 2006. Free Thought Radio is, of course, the weekly production of the Freedom from Religion Foundation, and regular listeners know our two purposes are to educate the public about non-theism. We serve as the nation's largest Free Thought Association of like-minded people, and we work diligently as a state church watchdog to keep religion out of government. We're over 35,000 members. If you are a member, thank you. If not, please join us today or ask for information at our homepage, ffrf.org.
In the second half of today's show, we're going to talk about the brain, about your brain. Our guest will be Jeff Hawkins, the man who pioneered handheld computing and who invented the Palm Pilot. Jeff Hawkins is a neuroscientist, founder of the neuroscience research company, Numenta.
Jeff Hawkins is a longtime supporter of FFRF. His new book is called 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence, a book that Richard Dawkins calls brilliant and exhilarating. And in a few minutes, we will announce some more exciting news, FFRF's first endowment of a secular studies program.
The music between segments today is by the jazz saxophonist Virginia Mayhew. Virginia is the daughter of longtime FFRF member Ann Helms, who is the daughter of the photographer Ansel Adams. Today we will hear Virginia Mayhew playing In Walked Bud, Sandan Shuffle, Tenderly, and Let's Fall in Love.
On our TV show, Free Thought Matters this week, FFRF's Director of Strategic Response, Andrew Seidel, talks with Sasha Sagan. We've had her on Free Thought Radio. She's the daughter of Carl Sagan and Andrian, about her new book, For Small Creatures Such as We. And it's a book about secular ritual, especially about how all of us, atheists and agnostics included, are really celebrating natural events.
The solstices and the equinoxes and biological changes, birth, coming of age, death, are such a huge percentage of the things that we celebrate, and it's really easy to see them as different when we're just looking at what the customs are and not the timing. But I think Easter is such a perfect example, and then of course you have Passover and Nowruz in Iran and like countless other holidays that are, you know, based around the spring equinox that have this same theme to them, which is, wow, things looked really bad. That was close, you know, but it looks like it's going to be okay. And that is springtime. That's what it is.
Yes, and of course, this is that time of year. You can watch that Free Thought Matters interview with Sasha Sagan this Sunday on broadcast TV in Chicago, Denver, Houston, Los Angeles, Madison, Wisconsin, Minneapolis, New York City, Phoenix, Portland, Oregon, Sacramento, Seattle, Washington, D.C., and San Francisco.
For stations and times, check FFRF.org under the news link. You can also see the show right now on YouTube. Just look for FFRF's Free Thought Matters playlist.
So if you check out our Free Thought of the Day website, you will see that today is the birthday of the award-winning journalist, author, and TV host, Vladimir Posner. He was born April 1, 1934, to Russian parents living in Paris. Posner is a lifelong atheist. In May 2017, speaking to the Center for Citizen Initiatives, Posner was asked what he thought about religion.
I'm an atheist. When I was in the United States for the first time after many, many years on the Donahue Show, I was asked by a lady in the audience if I believed in God. And I said, no, I'm an atheist. And there were about 200 people in the studio. They were as if I said that I eat children for breakfast. And after the show was over, a woman walked up to me. She said that in America, I should never say that I'm an atheist, that I should say I'm an agnostic, and people will think that's a religion, and that's okay. I don't like the church. I'm anti-church. Religion, that's different. But the church, to me, is a reactionary force.
That's journalist Vladimir Posner, and you and I, Dan, have had that same experience on other talk shows. The whole audience would gasp as one that they find out you're an atheist.
Well, I was also on Donahue's show about the same time, actually.
And you can read more about Vladimir Posner's life and the lives of many other historic and contemporary freethinkers at FFRF's Free Thought of the Day, FFRF.org/day.
In a minute, we're going to announce FFRF's first endowment of a secular studies program, which is pretty exciting. But first, there's a lot of news to report.
Yes, on the national front, and very exciting news in a Gallup poll, and Gallup is very conservative. And they issued their first survey of formal church membership in their 80-year history, in which church membership, self-reported church membership, dropped below 50% for the first time. So Americans are waking up. And Gallup even noted this is likely not an anomaly caused by the pandemic and quarantine, but part of a long-term trend. U.S. church membership was 73% when Gallup first measured it in 1937. It remained constant for the next six decades at nearly 70% before beginning a steady decline around the turn of the 21st century. And of course, this is attributed to the growing numbers of Americans who express no religious preference. So very important. And of course, we put out a press release about it pointing out that self-reporting is also very dangerous in terms of people saying they're going to church. Mostly, our nation has been the great unmasked, unchurched. And
People tend to over-report,
yes,
which might mean that actually the numbers are smaller.
And historically, in the late 18th century, maybe 10 to 15%. I've seen statistics only 7% were attending church at the time the Constitution was adopted. That's Leo Pfeffer. So it's about time. Very good news. And not in the not-so-good news category, we do have kind of a cabal of evangelicals getting involved in voter suppression, especially trying to deprive citizens who are black or young, anybody that they think might be a Democrat. And we have a press release about this if you want more details. The New York Times has been reporting about it. But we're looking at these leading evangelical groups, Tony Perkins with Family Research Council bragging, we've got 106 election-related bills that are in 28 states now trying to suppress the vote, and based on the big lie that Donald Trump actually won the presidential election. Our old nemesis, Alliance Defending Freedom, amend that. And that's a hugely wealthy organization. Heritage Foundation, the anti-abortion Susan B. Anthony list, hugely wealthy. The American Principles Project, you name it, they're out there trying to deprive you, black people in particular, young people, anybody they think is a Democrat, of the vote. And it's so important that we should pass the For the People Act, H.R. 1, that passed the House and is now in the Senate. And when you see who the enemies are of H.R. 1, you know what's at stake.
In other news, FFRF is urging the junior senator from Mississippi to recant recent Christian nationalist comments that she made in defense of voter suppression. Senator Cindy Hyde-Smith defended a suppression bill in Georgia during a Senate campaign finance committee this week, which would implement a number of undemocratic voter suppression tactics. Listen to what she said.
Georgia's a southern state just like Mississippi. I cannot speak for Georgia, but I can speak for Mississippi on why we would never hold an election on a Sunday. You know, this is our currency. This is a dollar bill. This says the United States of America, in God we trust. Etched in stone in the U.S. Senate chamber is in God we trust. When you swore in all of these witnesses, the last thing you said to them was, so help you God. In God's word in Exodus 20:18, it says, remember the Sabbath and keep it holy.
And of course, they did actually strike that provision that they were going to say you couldn't vote on Sunday in the Georgia bill, but that terrible bill otherwise passed. Hyde-Smith is full of misinformation and trotting out all of these Johnny-come-lately amendments, basically, to put God somehow in our government. So anyway.
And by the way, did you notice that she's suggesting that voting is somehow unholy? So, something else to celebrate, the demise of the so-called Unalienable Rights Commission. You might remember we were among the first to criticize and oppose Pompeo's, Secretary of State Pompeo's pet project, the so-called Commission on Unalienable Rights. We were sure that the true goal was to turn religious freedom into a super right that trumps other rights. So we're delighted that our advice was followed by President Biden's Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. He announced that that commission has been disbanded. It was flawed from the start with the idea of promoting Christian nationalism, so we celebrate that decision. Also, we want to announce in our FFRF news that our chapter in the Chicago area has put up a secular display in the Windy City. On this Saturday, April 3rd, the Metropolitan Chicago chapter will place in Daly Plaza two very colorful 8-foot banners promoting the secular views of the Founding Fathers. They say, in reason we trust with Jefferson and keep state and religion separate with John Adams. So we want to thank the executive director, Tom Kara, for getting a permit to put up this secular display.
And of course, Dan, he was doing that explicitly to counter a religious shrine that goes up every Easter and they use public property to worship. So that's why we're there. Now, the exciting news, the Freedom From Religion Foundation just announced this week a $300,000 secular studies endowment for Pitzer College. And Pitzer College is the home turf of Professor of Secular Studies Phil Zuckerman. And he is the person who has pioneered secular studies and secularity. Pitzer College was the first college in the United States to inaugurate a secular studies program back in 2011, and they're a small college. They only have 1,000 students, but more than 200 a year take the secular studies course, and they study things like sociology of secularity, God, Darwin, and design in America, fundamentalism and rationalism, anxiety in the age of reason. And the Freedom From Religion Foundation was able to use a bequest from Kenneth L. Prue, somebody who had not been able to go to college himself but was self-educated, to fund this secular studies endowment to reward Pitzer College, to reward Professor Zuckerman for being such pioneers in this very important study. And, of course, we've had Phil on our show. We're hoping to have him on again. Written so many books, both popular and academic, so important, about society without God, atheism and secularity, living the secular life. And we are thrilled to be able to do this to broaden and innovate the study of non-religious people, groups, movements, thought, and cultural expression, and increase the canon of scholarship and the scope of visibility of secularity.
So just like you can get a degree in religious studies, you can now get a degree in...
Well, you can get a... I'm not sure if you get a degree. It's a program.
Well, I think Phil told me that you can actually have a degree, like a major in secular studies. So
well,
we'll
very
ask
important.
Him next week.
Yeah.
We'll ask
we'll
him.
We'll see
that.
If we can get him on and ask him.
So we're going to take a break. After the break, we're going to hear the comedian Bill Maher tell us about an atheist who went crazy. And then we'll hear a really fun free thought song about the brain.
And after that, we will talk about the brain with neuroscientist Jeff Hawkins, author of 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence.
I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to join the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective organization of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate. Phone 1-800-335-4021, 1-800-335-4021, or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation at ffrf.org. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Beware of dogma. This is Free Thought Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. We are the executive directors of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, producing this show. In the past few weeks, we've talked about the connection between religion and gun violence. Last week on Real Time, Bill Maher brought up the same issue.
Mass shootings again. We didn't have this for a while. Now we've had, you know, one last week, one this week, a mass shooting, a 21-year-old Christian lunatic the week before, and now a Muslim 21-year-old lunatic. In a related story today, an atheist went crazy and rearranged his books. A related story. I made that part up.
So that actually happened, which is why it's really funny for me. Last week, I got some more books for this new book I'm working on, and I didn't have room on the top shelf to add them where they belong, so I had to move things on the lower shelves to make space. And FFRF member Marion Wiggins from Washington State, whom we've talked with on this show before, she sent me that Bill Maher clip.
And talking about rearranging things, in a few minutes, we'll interview a person who's reimagining how scientists think about the brain. We will talk with neuroscientist Jeff Hawkins about his new book about the brain. But first, let's listen to a song that is very relevant to that topic. It's by my co-host, Dan Barker, and Broadway composer Charles Strauss, an atheist who wrote the musicals Annie and Bye Bye Birdie. The song is called Poor Little Me.
The multitudes mumble mythologies without end. But me, I have trouble with ologies that pretend to show what can't be shown, to know what can't be known. Lutherans have liturgies, Calvinists have creeds, Muslims have their minarets, Catholics have their beads, Methodists have methods, holy truth to ascertain. But poor little me, I only have a brain. Bishops transubstantiate, Shintos ring their bells, Transcendentalists meditate, Wiccans weave their spells, Hindus chant a mantra when they can't relieve the pain. But poor little me, I only have a brain. So fearful of the Netherlands, believers band together. Unhappy with the weatherman, the Zunis wave a feather. They dance in circles to demand, Great Spirit send some rain. But what do you do if you only have a brain? Quakers quake and Shakers shake, and Jews eat kosher food. Rastafarians wear their hair in pious gratitude. They all boast of miracles that no one can explain. But poor little me, I only have a brain. Unhappy with the weatherman, the Zunis wave a feather. They dance in circles to demand, Great Spirit send some rain. But what do you do if you only have a brain? Quakers quake and Shakers shake, and Jews eat kosher food. Rastafarians wear their hair in pious gratitude. They all boast of miracles that no one can explain. But poor little me, I only have a brain.
That was Dan Barker singing Poor Little Me. Words by Dan and music by the celebrated Charles Strauss. You can hear that song on FFRF's music CD, Adrift on a Star, available at fffrf.org/shop. And it's supposed to be available on iTunes, isn't it, Dan, the album?
Well, we're switching over our provider, so it's going to be a few weeks before it's actually back up again.
Oh, okay.
We're switching from TuneCore to something else. So be patient if you're looking for any of our three CDs.
Or particular songs, because I guess they were only available as albums, and we meant them to be available singly, too. So we'll get that straightened out one of these years.
There's actually four CDs, because the Friendly Neighborhood Atheist CD is two whole CDs with like 30-some songs.
Yeah, so who says the Free Thought Movement does not have music?
Okay. So speaking about only having a brain, we're going to talk about the brain in just a couple minutes here. After the break, we're going to talk with the neuroscientist Jeff Hawkins, who, by the way, is the person who invented the Palm Pilot, which I used to own. Maybe we'll talk to him about that. He's the author of a brand new book, which is making many waves. If you saw the Library of Science catalog today, it's right up on the front. His new book is called 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence. I'm Dan Barker with Annie Laurie Gaylor. We'll be back with more Free Thought Radio.
Hello, this is Janine Garofalo. Are you tired of right-wing politicians who desperately want to impose their religious beliefs on the rest of us? I know I am. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Join the fight and call the Freedom From Religion Foundation toll-free at 1-800-335-4021. That's 1-800-335-4021. Or visit the Freedom From Religion Foundation website at ffrf.org. That's www.ffrf.org. Proud to be an atheist, Janine Garofalo.
Protect the First Amendment. It protects you. This is Free Thought Radio.
I could while away the hours, confer with the flowers, consult with the rain.
and my head. I'd be scratching while my thoughts are busy hatching if I only had a brain. I'd unravel every riddle for any individual in trouble or in pain.
With the thoughts you'd be thinking, you could be a Luther Lincoln if you only had a brain.
Welcome back to Free Thought Radio. I'm Dan Barker.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor. The words to that song from The Wizard of Oz, If I Only Had a Brain, were written by the free-thinking lyricist Yip Harburg, who definitely did have a brain. And brains are what we're going to talk about for the rest of the show.
Jeff Hawkins is the co-founder of Numenta. That's a neuroscience research company. He's also the founder of the Redwood Neuroscience Institute and one of the founders of the field of handheld computing. He's a member of the National Academy of Engineering and author of the book On Intelligence.
Jeff Hawkins is a longtime supporter of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. His newest book, just released last month, is called 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence. The groundbreaking book has an adulatory foreword by Richard Dawkins, who calls it brilliant and exhilarating. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff Hawkins.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, when we were setting this up, we were a little uncertain whether you would be able to make it today because yesterday you got your second coronavirus vaccine. How'd that go?
It went great. It was very easy to do, and I had no effects. My wife and I both got our shot yesterday, our second shot, and we feel great.
So, and Annie Laurie had her second Moderna shot this week.
Tuesday afternoon. I didn't feel so great yesterday. I am feeling much better today, and I'm feeling great that I know that now I'm going to be inoculated.
And I'm celebrating 2 weeks since my second shot. So all praise be to science, I think we can say there. So.
I'll tell you, it's really a relief to know you've gotten the vaccination. It sort of lightens your mind up quite a bit.
So you are a devotee of science, and I used to own a Palm Pilot, one of those PDA devices. And is it true you invented the Palm Pilot?
Yeah, I was the founder of Palm. I built a company with a bunch of partners of mine, and then I was sort of the lead designer on all the Palm products, the Palm Pilot, and the early smartphones, the Trio smartphones. But that was a while ago. I haven't been doing that now for 20 years, so over 20 years.
Well, it seems like ancient history now, but that was really cutting edge at the time. I remember that, the little stylus, and you could connect it to your computer, and I mean, that was pretty amazing, groundbreaking work you did there.
Yeah, well, it really sort of introduced the whole field of computing devices you could hold in your hand.
So in your book, 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence, you write that your true love is the brain and neuroscience. So, and you say right now there's this battle between the old brain and the new brain, which I found fascinating. So what is that battle, and what are the 1,000 Brains?
Well, the human brain, and we're interested in the human brain because we're interested in intelligence and what it means to be a human. The part of our brain which is most responsible for intelligence is something called the neocortex, and it's a big wrinkly thing that you see when you look at a brain. And it's about 70% of our brain, and it's a fairly recently got large in our species, and that's why we're so smart. And yet we have many other parts of the brain that control lots of different things. And so there's parts of the brain that control our emotions and our bodily functions, and so on. And these different parts of the brain are not always in agreement about what to do. A simple example is breathing. Your breathing usually occurs in part of the brain that's very ancient, and you don't have to think about it, but you can control your breathing through your neocortex. You can say, hey, I want to hold my breath, take a deep breath. And so the way that the cortex does is it sort of asks the other parts of the brain, would you do this for me? But the other parts of the brain will say, fine, but if you need some oxygen, I'm going to ignore you and take a breath anyway. So this is a very simple example of, so we have the conflicting sort of goals sometimes. We have sort of the more rational part of our brain, the neocortex, think about the intelligent part of the brain. That's where we're conscious of. And then the older part of the brain, older parts, there's many of them, they don't always agree. And so many of the conflicts that we see in human existence arise from the fact that we still have very primitive behaviors, primitive desires, which are very good for evolutionary points of view, but may not be the best thing for modern society. So that's the basic of that old brain, new brain part. And then the thousand brain theory is what we've done is we've studied the neocortex, and we basically trying to figure out what it does and how it does it. And we made a lot of progress on that. And that's why I wrote this book. And one of the surprising things about what we learned about the neocortex is how it goes about what it's doing. We know what it does. Essentially, it builds a model of the world. And so the way to think about it, it's in your head. The neurons literally recreate in neural structures knowledge about how the world is structured, everything you know, every object and how it looks and feels and so on, how people behave. But what the thousand brain theory refers to is that model, surprisingly, is not one thing. We don't have one model of the world. We have thousands and thousands of independent models that vote together. So the neocortex is divided into these over 100,000, what they call columns. Each one is building a little model of something, and they work together to give us our how we perceive the world and what we know. And that was a surprising discovery, and that's what the thousand brains refers to.
So what I found fascinating about your book is how you explain how you can flatten the neocortex into kind of like a large napkin shape, and if you flatten it out, these what you call cortical columns, I guess, 150,000 of them. They're all basically kind of based on the same algorithm. There's a simplicity there that leads to the complexity. Can you explain that a little bit more? Isn't it actually kind of, talking about algorithms, isn't it actually simpler than we had thought?
Well, I think, well, it depends on, I don't know if I would say it's simpler. It's different than we thought. So this idea that the cortex is divided into these columns, not new, that's been known for a long time. And it was quite a few, several decades ago that a famous neurophysiologist, Vernon Mountcastle, he looked at these things and he said, if you look at in the detail, you go under a microscope in great detail, you have these 150,000 columns and they have this very complex architecture, complex circuitry, and many different types of cells, but they all look the same. And so parts of the neocortex are doing vision and parts are doing language and parts are doing hearing and parts are doing touch and parts are doing high-level thought processes. Yet everywhere you look, it looks the same. And so he made this amazing speculation, a proposal that everything that we think about of human intelligence is basically built on the same algorithm. It's just many, many copies of it. And if you take this thing and you attach it to eyes, you get seeing. And if you attach it to your ears, you get hearing. So this idea was proposed in 1979, and it was hard to believe that all these things are really the same. That, you know, when we look at the world, sight doesn't feel like language, right? It doesn't feel like touch. It feels different to us. But he said, nope, they're all the same. And there's tremendous evidence for this. So what we've discovered is sort of the key secret of what one of these things does, this algorithm. It's not a simple algorithm, let's put it that way. So it's simple, and the whole brain is simpler than we thought because all these different things we think of intelligence are based on the same idea. But what that idea is not a trivial idea. It's what's going on in each column is pretty sophisticated. But we've cracked the code on that. We pretty certainly understand what's going on inside of each of these columns.
So, well, I guess that's why I thought it was simpler. But and you describe how that explains how the neocortex evolved so quickly, because it took one basic success and then spread it out, right?
It made many copies of the same thing, yeah. If you look at them, only mammals have a neocortex, and all mammals have a proper neocortex. But, you know, a mouse's neocortex is quite small. It can be the size of a small postage stamp or something like that. And if you flatten it out, and ours is, as you said, about the size of a large dinner napkin. But the mouse's neocortex looks very much like ours. It just has fewer of these columns. And so it's easy for evolution to say, hey, I got something that's working. Let's make many copies of it, as opposed to evolving something totally new. And that's the basic idea how our brains got so large, is that we just have many, many more copies of these things, which is a surprising, you know, it's an amazing thing, actually, that you could just get smarter by building more of the same thing.
So a big part of your book is reference frames. And you say that all thought, not just everything we do, like moving and seeing and touching and hearing, but all thought comes back to reference frames. And you say that all thought is basically movement. Can you explain that?
Yeah, so this is the key to the whole thing, and it's a little part that's most difficult to describe, but I try to make it very simple in the book. You know, we all know a lot of things, right? You know, we know what things feel like, we know what things sound like, we know things what they look like, we know tens of thousands of words, we know how organizations run and so on. It's all information stored in your head and stored in the neocortex. And the question is, how is it stored in there? What is this model of the world I referred to earlier? You know, what does it look like if I try to create this in cells that are called neurons? And the answer is that there's a structure for knowledge. You know, when we learn something, we don't just learn a list of facts. Someone may present it that way, but in our head, that information is stored in a way that makes it actionable. And so the way that neurons do this is they use what we call reference frames. You can think of a reference frame like a map. A map is a way of taking information and organizing it in a way that makes it useful and actionable. It's not just a list of, like, here's the things in this town. It's like, no, where are they relative to each other? And if I wanted to get from one place in a town to another place in a town, how would I go about that? Well, I could use a map to do that. So a map is, in some sense, a model of a town. And a map is a type of reference frame. The grid lines on a map are a type of reference frame. Latitude and longitude is another type of reference frame. It allows us to know where things are on Earth. So the brain does this for everything. It creates reference frames for everything you know, the simple things, the coffee cup, your smartphone, and so on. And information is stored at locations in these reference frames, just like information about a town is stored on the different squares on a map. And when we think, what we're doing is we're moving in the neurons, or sort of moving from location to location and retrieving the information that's there. So it literally, when I want to recall something, I have to, the structures internal to your head are doing the equivalent of movement. It's the equivalent of, like, oh, if I want to recall what's in my house, I would move from room to room. Even mentally, I would move from room to room, just imagining. And what you're literally doing is going from location to location. And that's how all thinking is occurring. Everything we know is stored in reference frames. We didn't know this a few years ago. But it explains an awful lot about how we think, how we learn, how knowledge is represented in the brain, how it becomes actionable. Even if we're not physically moving, we're mentally moving through these spaces in this model in our head.
We're talking with Jeff Hawkins, who's the author of 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence. Jeff is a member of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This book is getting great acclaim. And when we come back, Jeff, we want to talk a little bit about what you mentioned in the book about the risk of false beliefs. So stay tuned for more Free Thought Radio.
I believe in an America where the separation of church and state is absolute, where no religious body seeks to impose its will, directly or indirectly, upon the general populace.
Let's restore respect for America's secular roots. Help the Freedom From Religion Foundation defend the wall of separation between state and church. Join us at FFRF.org. Freedom depends on freethinkers. Speaking freely, thinking freely. This is Free Thought Radio.
I'm Annie Laurie Gaylor.
And I'm Dan Barker. Welcome back. We're continuing our talk with Jeff Hawkins, author of a brand new book, groundbreaking book. It's called 1,000 Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence. The book has three parts. The first part is about the brain, neuroscience. The second part is about AI, and he explains in the book, you'll have to read it, why there is no I in AI. There's no intelligence in artificial intelligence. And the third part of the book is about humanity and false beliefs and all that. But Jeff, one of the things that really hit me in your book is how do neurons make their decisions? And I didn't realize until I read your book that neurons have so many synapses that they can have potentials rather than making decisions. And you say that the decision is made kind of by democracy or by consensus or by voting. Is that true?
Yeah, so as I mentioned in previously, there's these thousands and thousands of these cortical columns that are all modeling the world, yet we don't perceive them. We have a singular perception. We think, you know, why is that? And this is known as the binding problem. But the simple answer is they vote. They send these long connections to each other, and they reach a consensus about what they're seeing and experiencing in the world. And that is what we perceive. We don't perceive the thousands of individual models. We perceive their voting, and that's a singular sort of sensation.
It's kind of like how Dennett described consciousness as a kind of center of narrative gravity. You don't see all the activity. You see the end result of it, which we call thought, I guess.
Yeah. Yes. Well, most of what's going on in your brain, you're not aware of at all. You can't perceive it.
So, Jeff, let's talk about what you call the risk of false beliefs, and where you touch on religion in your book.
Yeah. So, you know, we build this model of the world in our head, as I mentioned, and it's strange, but what we actually perceive moment to moment is the model, not the real world. I know this sounds odd, but it's true. And so our model of the world generally is pretty good. It generally reflects the way the real world really is. But it can be false. We can have false beliefs about the world. And I think this is one of the great dilemmas that we face as a species, is that many of the conflicts we have is because we have different beliefs about the same fact. And I think getting to the core understanding of how this occurs is important if we're going to survive for the long term. So I go into depth about how false beliefs can come about, the different ways they propagate, and why they're sometimes very difficult to get rid of. And I believe if everyone understood this, if every child grew up understanding that they are prone to forming false beliefs about the world, it's just the way our brains work, we probably have a better society.
Well, you tell the story in your book about when you were a child and all these kids in the playground were comparing their different religious views, and that got you to thinking.
Yeah, that was an amazing experience. It was one of the very formative experiences I had as a child. We went around, people going around the court in the circle in the playground, and I was a very young kid, and they were all talking about what they believed and the different, ways they practiced their religion. And there was no animosity. It was just they were practicing, replaying what they'd been told by their parents. And when they got to me, I realized I didn't have a religion. I was not raised religious at all, nor was I raised as an atheist. We just didn't have it. And I said, I don't have a religion. And they all said, oh, that can't be. And they said, well, what do you believe? And you must do this something. And I'm like, well, that really threw me for a loop. And I realized very quickly, even as a young child, that, well, that's only one of them could be right because they all disagreed. And then probably they were all wrong. That would be the most likely outcome. So it became a founding moment in my life.
So you mentioned as false beliefs things like vaccinations causing autism, that climate change isn't a threat, in that there's an afterlife. Do you want to?
Yeah, well, I know these are very controversial topics. And so I started off with a series of false beliefs that most wouldn't talked about phantom limbs. I talked about flat earth believers and so on, because I knew when you talk about vaccines and climate change, there'd be a lot of people who'd get angry at me. And that's happened a bit. Some people object to this. But I wanted to ease people into the idea, like, you know, this, we can understand this without getting political about it. And at least I tried to do that. I tried to avoid being very overtly talking about religion. I don't even use that word very much in the book. And I talk just more about false beliefs in general. But the illusions are obvious. Again, I'm not trying to be strident about it. I'm just trying to, like, hey, inclusively, we can all understand what's going on. And we should all each recognize we believe different things. And there are neural bases that the brain can explain how we do this.
And you give some great examples about how the old brain and the new brain fight with each other. The old brain says, have some more cake, have some more cake. And the new brain is saying, wait, you don't want to have more cake. But you give a good example when you talk about population control and sexual reproduction. You say that there is a win-win situation between the old brain and the new brain when it comes to population control. Why don't you explain it? Or maybe I can read that paragraph later that you wrote.
I give an example of, like, it's kind of distressing at times realizing that we are an intelligent species. We do all these wonderful things, but we also are somewhat not in control of all our basic instincts. And that's why, you know, people do bad things sometimes. And I give an example of birth control as an example of how we can achieve both. The older parts of our brain want to have sex, and that's important for recreation. We can't get around that, and there's nothing wrong with that. But on the other hand, we don't want to just have so many children that, you know, we kill ourselves and destroy the world. And so we can invent something like birth control, which allows the older parts of our brain to have what they want, and yet the newer parts of the brain can say, yeah, okay, but we don't have to have as many children as a result of that. In terms of, you know, there are ways we can sort of mitigate these dangers that exist between our more basic instincts, which lead to problems like climate change and overpopulation. Yet we can sort of, there are ways, it's not all gloom and doom, there are ways we can achieve the results we want.
Well, let me read one of the sentences at the end of your book. You say the simple and clever solution to make sure every woman has the ability to control her own fertility and is empowered to exercise that option if she wants to.
Hear.
So that is a clever solution. We get to have our cake and eat it too.
Well, and I bring it up because why aren't we doing that? You know, what is wrong? Why are people against this? And it's sort of odd at times. You say, well, how come we're not doing more of that, right? And so I try to tease apart in the book what are the forces, the nature of false beliefs that are preventing us from doing what is so obvious to many people, a desirable and a good thing to do. So in some sense, I'm lamenting about the situation we find ourselves in the world and trying to get a grip on them and suggest ways we can get around these problems.
Thank you, Jeff. So, we're out of time. I'm sorry we're out of time. We have to cut you off here. Listeners can read more about this in his fascinating book, A Thousand Brains, A New Theory of Intelligence by Jeff Hawkins. Thank you for joining us today, Jeff.
Thank you for having me.
And that's our show. Thank you, Buzz, for producing. We want to say hello to listeners to the broadcast in Philadelphia and New Jersey, in Madison, Wisconsin, in Janesville, Wisconsin, in College Station and Bryan, Texas, in Columbia, Missouri, in Eugene, Oregon, in San Marcos, Texas, in Bellows Falls, Vermont and New Hampshire, and Ithaca and Watkins Glen, New York. Find out more about our podcast as well at ffrf.org/radio.
And join us at ffrf.org or ask for more information and support Free Thought Radio by becoming a member and support FFRF's vital state church litigation and cheerleading of this vital principle. And tune in next week for more rational radio and blasphemous broadcasting.
Radio is a production of the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org. Irreverent views, news, music, and interviews brought to you by Annie Laurie Gaylor and Dan Barker.
I hope someday